Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Hello, and welcome to our weekly broadcast of Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. I'm your host, Roy Richards, helping to guide you over the sometimes rocky midlife terrain to your pot of gold, a second half of life filled with joy, dedication to others, a sense of accomplishment, and positive expectations for the future. The last two programs, we talked about wealth, how rich habits can help you accumulate it, and how a healthy, positive self-image and a life in balance are far more important than just a fat wallet. Today, we'll turn to another essential ingredient in the formula for true wealth, positive adult relationships. Few, if any, mature, well-rounded individuals can be happy all by themselves. No matter how rich you are, I'll wager that your life is far from ideal if you suffer from the after effects of a bitter divorce or your marriage has hit the skids. There is nothing more stressful than waking up each morning or coming home each evening to continual bickering or heated disagreement over every little thing. Equally unpleasant are mutual cold stares or the dreaded silent treatment. Whether you are a millionaire or unemployed living on welfare, a bad marriage isn't much fun, is it? If your marriage is on the rocks, how do you plan to resolve the issues? Have you two talked things out? Are you and your spouse committed to saving your marriage? Or are both of you ready to throw in the towel? On the other side of the coin, life alone in that big empty house or the house filled only with you and your kids isn't so great either. If you really went through a divorce or recently went through a divorce or the death of your mate, are you prepared to go it alone, or should you enter into a new long-term relationship? Our distinguished guest today is here to help answer a series of relationship questions. If your marriage is in trouble but not beyond repair, are there effective methods to reach out to your spouse and restore the warm, loving partnership you once had? And if you are divorced or single, do you fully understand why your last relationship failed? What relationship skills do you need to master before you try again? And finally, if you have suffered through a recent tragedy or some other serious setback, like loss of a child or extended unemployment, illness of your mate, or some other traumatic event, are you ready to cope for that? Have you jointly recovered? Can you restore mutual peace, hope, and joy, and actually strengthen your relationship? Our guest is Kimberly Pryor, relationship coach, author of The Indestructible Relationship, which is winner of the 2012 Epic eBook Award for Best Nonfiction. She also is a freelance journalist with more than 600 articles in magazines and newspapers countrywide. She will be hosting the first annual Rebuilding Your Life After Divorce Mountain Retreat at beautiful North Lake Tahoe, California, from September 15th through the 17th. Hello, Kim, and welcome to our program.
Hi, Roy. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the first situation I described, an established midlife marriage that's in trouble. What are the five factors that most often destroy a marriage? And presuming it's not too late, what steps can you take to salvage and restore your relationship?
Well, the first one is falling out of love. That is a huge reason why a lot of people get divorced, is because they feel as if they've fallen out of love.
Yeah.
But what I learned for the research for my book and talking to different couples is that you can actually fall back in love by using a specific technique, and I call it the honey, you're so good to me technique. A woman I call Phoebe, she used this technique very effectively. She realized that she no longer loved her husband, Denny, and she considered asking him for a divorce. But by using this technique, she actually fell back in love with him again. The first thing she did was she sat down with a sheet of paper, and on it she wrote a list of all the objective reasons why Denny made a good husband. You know, he was a good provider. He was a good father. He was lots of fun. He had his life together. He wasn't an alcoholic or compulsive gambler. You know, she could find no objective reason to actually divorce him. And then she thought, you know, if I had a wonderful relationship at one time and I was in love with him then, why couldn't I have that type of relationship again? So then she wrote down all the non-objective reasons she loved her husband, the little things he did she had once been crazy about, you know, everything like that, the little things that she'd fallen in love with to begin with. And every day she ran through that list in her mind. And about once a week, she'd feel a spark of passionate love for her husband once again. And it would fizzle, but then almost as soon as it started, it would go away. But then she persisted at this. And before long, that same spark would ignite twice a week, then three times a week. And after about a year and a half, 2 years, they had an absolutely wonderful relationship again, to the point where Phoebe was very glad she never divorced him because she fell in love with him all over again.
It's interesting also to ask whether your spouse has really changed over the years or whether you've changed.
Yeah, you know, I was going to bring that up later, too, at some of the things we might talk about. But yes, that is actually one of the other reasons, too, that people end up getting divorced, is because if your spouse changes in a way that you can't respect and you can't come to a point where you can respect that change, then that causes conflict, and that is, you know, part of the reason why a number of couples get divorced.
I know in your book you also mentioned that oftentimes it's stress that really isn't directly related to your spouse that is causing your unease rather than actually what the spouse is responsible for.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a number of reasons why couples end up getting divorced. And, you know, I've got in the book I mention rather a lot of them, but stress is a big factor. And, you know, one of the things I recommend to people, because stress can be as damaging as the other man or the other woman, you know, we sometimes think it's the relationship that's the problem, when it's really that we're just completely stressed out. So one of the things I recommend to people to keep your stress in check is to think of the stressful situation as an outside entity. When you come home from work and you know you're stressed, you're irritated at your boss, imagine the stress walking in the door with you and actually give it a name, personify it. In your mind, dress it in a goofy outfit. You know, that will make you laugh when you start to think that you're walking in this door with this thing dressed in a goofy outfit. And when you start to laugh, you'll realize that you're not really mad at your husband or your wife. You simply have brought home this uninvited guest. And that's the real problem. The problem isn't your spouse. It's the stress.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I know I've had periods when I was out of work or underemployed or something. It was very tough to keep spirits up, and I had to be very diligent in not taking it out on my spouse and my children.
Yeah, it helps to separate it, to realize that, you know, you've got three things. You've got yourself, you've got your spouse, and actually if you have children, you've got four things. You've got yourself, your spouse, your children, and the stress is really a fourth thing. But if you could push that stress outside of your relationship and realize it's an outside entity, it doesn't have to be part of your relationship, then that makes a huge difference.
And if you involve your spouse and ask for help and describe fully why you're stressed out,
yes,
that can be a big plus, too, I'm sure.
Yes, exactly, because if your spouse knows that you're stressed out, then he or she is going to be more understanding and realize, okay, I'm not taking this personally. It's, you know, if you know that your significant other is stressed out over something and is yelling at you, getting mad at you, you can say to yourself, okay, I'm not taking this personally. He's had a bad day at work. She's had a bad day at work. Or, you know, her mother is sick and in the hospital, and you realize that has nothing to do with you, and that really helps.
Well, how can you, as one partner in a troubled marriage, determine whether or not your relationship is salvageable? Of course, it takes two people to tango in that, but, how do I, as one person in a relationship, determine that?
You know, that's a good question, you know, whether it is salvageable or not. I mean, I personally believe that every marriage is salvageable unless you're being abused, you know, if you're in an abusive relationship, or infidelity is another big one.
Yeah, I mean, infidelity is real. I mean, real and
what?
Lasting. I mean, where the person really falls in love and it's not just,
yeah,
you know, fooling around and repenting over it, but...
Right. And I mean, the infidelity is a whole nother topic in and of itself, but as far as, you know, keeping, you know, as far as making sure that, you know, how do you know if your marriage is salvageable? I think what it takes, first of all, is what you said before. Both parties need to work on it. If both parties are not working on it, then, you know, that's the first step. I mean, if your husband or wife is not willing to work on it, but I think a lot of it goes back to what I said about the people falling out of love. That is one of the biggest reasons why people get divorced, is they simply don't feel like they have those feelings again. And one of the challenges is that if you divorce someone because you're no longer in love with them, you know, what's going to happen in your next relationship? Your next relationship, you get married again after, you know, 5-6 years when the passion wears off, you're not in love with them again. Do you divorce them again? So, you know, for most people, our brains are not wired to keep up that infatuation and that passionate type of love for years and years and years.
Right.
So it's worth it to work on the relationship. But again, you know, both parties have to be willing to do it. And if they are, you know, it is possible to fall back in love again.
Not to mention that we all grow old, and obviously love must be much more than just physical attraction, because that's not going to last year in and year out in the same form that it did at the beginning.
Exactly. And, you know, I have, there's a lesson that I learned a number of years ago, is that it truly is not all about physical attraction. When I was younger, whenever I saw a photo, if I was dating online, I would look at a photograph and I would look at it and say, oh, well, that person doesn't appeal to me. So I would just not even, you know, bother to contact them back. But now I realize, through some lessons in my life, that it is possible to fall in love with somebody that at first you might not have even been physically attracted to, but once you realize that they make you laugh, that they're interesting, that you have fun around them, you know, you can suddenly fall in love with someone who maybe wasn't your type to begin with.
Yeah, that's very, very true. It was interesting to hear a person recently that is involved in the relationship industry talking about how many false facts are up on the internet and these internet dating, and how much truth there is versus how much BS.
Oh, people lying? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Like people lying about their age and stuff like that?
Well, about their age or their how much money they earn or whatever fact it might be.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things, I mean, I've gone out on a ton of internet dates. Probably over the last 8 years, I mean, I have been dating somebody, seeing somebody, I have a boyfriend, but before that, I had gone on a ton of dates. And even most recently, I have gone on a number of dates because my boyfriend and I had taken a break. But one of the things I noticed is that guys do tend to lie about their age simply because they're afraid that a woman is going to reject them, obviously, if they come across as being too old. And this is something that is common that's out there. I have only run into that out of 100 dates. I've had one guy admit that he was doing it. And he did look younger than his age. But one of the things that, you know, the challenge with that is once you find out that somebody's lying, you think, what else are they lying about?
Yeah, exactly.
So if you are a guy and you're out there doing online dating, even if you think it's going to bring to you a woman because, you know, she'll forgive you because you lied, she's going to have a little bit of distrust for you if you lie about your age. So that is one thing that definitely, you know, I don't recommend. You know, I don't know how to spot a liar really online dating, but I do know that you can pick up on certain inconsistencies. If somebody tells you something, and like, for instance, let's say that he tells you that, he works at a certain, like, I had this one guy tell me that he works for the government, and he'd been on some government planes, but he also worked at a men's clothing store. Now, there's some certain inconsistencies there. He works at a men's clothing store, but he flies on government planes. So there's, you know, you can, if you start asking questions online, like in emails before you actually meet the person, if you start asking the right questions and ask them a lot of questions and do some email exchanges beforehand, you can spot some inconsistencies that make you wonder, is this person really telling me the truth?
Maybe he was a deep undercover agent for the CIA.
Yeah, in his dreams, probably.
It was before your time. There was a program, I Led Three Lives, with this guy, Philbrick, who was a claimed to be a communist, but in fact he was an FBI plant. And then he had a third job as a business person or something. It was kind of interesting. That was in the early days of TV, I think. But describe an easy way for a longtime husband and wife to fall passionately back in love. I know you mentioned that somewhere in there.
Yeah, you know what? Basically, what I said before. I mean, you know, the honey is a good to me technique. Just think about all the ways. Really start to appreciate the ways that your husband or wife has been good to you. And this really falls into something else. We touched briefly on the factors that destroy most marriages. We really only covered the first one, but this really ties into one of the other factors. The lack of appreciation is another factor that destroys marriages. And that's why I recommend that you treat your sweetheart, whether it's your husband, your wife, or your boyfriend, girlfriend, treat them like a stranger.
Yeah.
Because, we think it's okay to snap at our partners or criticize them, where people that we barely know, we're polite to.
Yeah,
that's why
when you're dating someone, you don't snap at them. It's only after marriage.
After marriage. That's why the closer you get to someone, the more you know them, the more you feel like you're comfortable with them, that you can do that. And that's why after Hurricane Andrew, residents of the damaged areas, they felt as if they were closer to their neighbors than they were before the storm.
Yes.
But they were having more problems with their families. So, if your significant other has a bad day at work and you give him or her a compliment, it can really feel like a life vest to help them stay afloat. It can really make a bad day seem so much better. And the more you can appreciate your husband or wife, the more you can express your appreciation so they know you appreciate them, that will really go a very far way in helping to save the marriage.
Yes, it will. Well, you had somewhere you mentioned a surprising reason why some men have affairs, and what's the one time that you should forgive your spouse for cheating?
Well, one of the things I discovered in the Indestructible Relationship when I was interviewing a couple who they weren't married yet, but they had been in a serious relationship. They were engaged. And right around that same point, the guy had an affair. And one of the things I discovered was the huge effect that a traumatic effect can have on you later. It's called the anniversary effect.
Oh.
So, for instance, let's say your parent died. Your father died or your mother died, and before that maybe they'd gone through a serious illness, so you had to take care of them, and you're going through a lot of stress. Well, a year after that can have a huge effect, even though you don't realize it. So one of the things I discovered in the Indestructible Relationship was that the huge effect this can have, to the point where it can really even cause infidelity. If the person is questioning certain things, in the case of the couple that I interviewed, the man had an affair because he was questioning whether relationships could last. He started thinking about his father's death. He started thinking about how his father's relationship with his mother didn't last. He was really, as the year anniversary of his father's death approached, his fiancée was the only person on their side of the country that knew his father had even died. He didn't want to deal with his father's death. And yet here his fiancée she's the one who knew about the death. So he felt like he needed to run away from her so that he didn't have to deal with his father's death. And he needed to do something to get her out of his life. So he had the affair.
Huh.
And they went through a lot of, she went through a lot of turmoil, wondering if she could trust him again and whether this was really the case. But after speaking with him and really realizing to the extent that he was still grieving and mourning, that it truly did have an effect.
That's interesting. It's so important that couples attempting to reconcile after an affair like that or something, that they really understand why the affair took place. And there are reasons, I guess, that you can forgive an affair if there's a good reason for it. But there's never a really good reason, but...
Exactly. That becomes difficult because, truly there's never a good reason, but, if you can determine whether the person who has cheated on you is a serial cheater or whether this is something that was caused by a stressful event in his or her life, that's what makes a huge difference, because stress, traumatic experiences can really affect us in certain ways, and not everyone realizes that a death of a parent can be that traumatic. I mean, they think, okay, well, you know, it's a parent dying. It's not the same like a child dying, or and it truly isn't. But yet, it can have a huge effect on you, one that you would never imagine that it could have.
Yeah. Well, especially when, like, my parents were in their mid-90s when they passed away and they had full lives. It's a lot less traumatic then than someone losing a parent at a young age that still has some responsibilities.
Exactly. You know, you don't expect to lose your parent when they're in their 40s or 50s. So that, and I believe that in the man in my book, I believe he lost his father fairly young. I mean, I think the father was in the 50s. You know, and that is a lot more traumatic than if they've lived a full life.
Well, let's look at the other side. Let's say if you're over 50 and divorced or widowed, and they say even over 45, should you get married again, or what are some of the pros and cons to consider that and to avoid the same mistakes you made the last time?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, because you know, research shows that men who are married are healthier than single men. So there are practical advantages to being married in that sense. And if you want to grow as a person, really marriage is one of the best ways that you can do that, because you have to learn to negotiate life with another person by your side. And it's not like living together where you can, you know, leave at any time. When you're married, it's really a much more permanent thing. So there are some practical considerations in that sense. But one of the things I think is really more important, the question to ask is, you know, not should you get married again, but if you don't have a significant other in your life right now, to realize that you can be happy on your own and you don't need another person to make you happy. So if you are over 50 and you're single, you know, to have hobbies and passions that you can immerse yourself in and find fulfillment that way. And
Number of close friends and, you know, casual relationships where neither side is pushing too hard to get married, or, you know, let things develop, that type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Or even, you know, same-sex friends. Go out and have fun with them. You know, live your life to the fullest. And when you're doing things you love, I mean, when you're participating in your passions and your hobbies, you're more attractive that way anyway. And you may even meet the person that you're meant to be with through your hobbies and passions.
Well, what's the six-word sentence that can stop your next marriage from ending in divorce? I was very intrigued by that comment in your promotion.
Yeah, and you know, that is actually the honey, you're so good to me. That's the appreciation, expressing the appreciation. Making sure that you are always expressing appreciation. And here's another big one, too. Here's another really, really important thing. Complaining. This is in the same way, falls in the same category as appreciation.
Yeah.
A lot of times we tend to complain about what our partners are doing, and the best way to cure this is to turn complaints into requests. So, for example, you might say to your partner, "Well, you never empty the dishwasher," and you would transform that into, instead of saying that, you would say, "You know, I have an early meeting today. Could you empty the dishwasher?"
Yeah.
So you're turning it into a request. Or, you know, instead of saying, "You never help out with the laundry," it becomes, "Would you mind putting the clothes in the dryer this morning, because I've got to be out of here in 5 minutes.
Very definitely. And it's so difficult for so many husbands who have wives that have careers themselves. I know I always fell into this trap that, you don't expect to have to do all these household chores at night after you've been working all day. But if your spouse is working all day, too, or raising the children or whatever, that's a trap we so often fall into.
Yeah, exactly. It needs to be teamwork, but you know, it's really all about, if there is something bothering you that your partner is doing, then it's all about expressing what bothers you in a question form versus a blaming form. You know, it's like, "You never empty the dishwasher" is a blaming thing, whereas, you know, "I have an early meeting today. Could you empty the dishwasher?" It's just transforming it into a question so that it doesn't come across as blaming.
Well, we're just about out of time, but here's an issue close to my heart, because we lost our 30-year-old daughter in a plane crash a few years back.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was very traumatic. But what is a common trait of couples who survive a crisis or tragedy with their partnership intact?
That's a very good question. And what it is blame. They avoid blame. Because what happens, you know, when you go through a traumatic experience like that is, you know, there's always this situation where you may either blame your partner, or sometimes you don't even blame your partner, you blame God, or you blame an outside entity, and you become so angry. For instance, the couple in my book who had lost their child, near the end, there's a couple whose marriage ended because they had lost their child. And the husband, he was so angry at God. He was angry at the road crews for not sanding the road because their child, their teenage son, had died in a car accident.
Sad story.
Yeah, he was so angry that it caused the destruction of the marriage, because even though he didn't blame his wife for their son's death, he blamed other entities, outside entities, and he was so angry at them that it carried over into their relationship.
Yeah, it's with our case, of course, our daughter was grown and on her own, so we weren't blaming each other for it, but other than the fact that maybe we should have raised her not to be so right, not to want to be a pilot and all that kind of wild stuff that she did.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm sorry for your loss.
Oh, it's been a while. She was a real inspiration to our lives when we found out some of the things she's accomplished at her young age. But anyway, tell us a little bit about your book and how people can obtain it, and also about your upcoming Divorce Recovery Mountain Retreat. I know time is pretty short on that, but somebody may be in the general area and still be able to make plans to get to it.
Yeah. The book is called The Indestructible Relationship. It's available on Amazon.com, but you also get a free copy of it if you go to the Rebuilding Your Life After Divorce Mountain Retreat. And if you are anywhere in the West, whether you're in Oregon or California or Nevada or Arizona, especially within driving distance of the retreat, I highly encourage you to go.
Maybe even Utah.
Utah. I mean, any of those states, because what's going to be happening is 15 speakers. They're going to show you how to it's going to be great. They're going to show you how to meet quality people as you begin dating again. They're going to show you how to rebuild your wealth, how to reconnect with what makes you happy. I mean, even how to feel so attractive, you'll be irresistible to the opposite sex, which is a great topic. And you know, there's a lot of guys out there. It was their spouse's idea to get a divorce. And I've just seen them go through so much heartache. Yeah. And this retreat can really give you a lot of peace if you're in that situation. So, there's also a dress as your favorite divorce celebrity party with a $100 cash prize for the best costume.
And this is open to both men and women?
Yeah, it's open to both men and women. And if you use the coupon code HAPPY, you can take $30 off the retreat fees and attend for as little as $69 plus lodging.
And how is there a website they can go to find out about this?
Yes, it's www.afterdivorceadvice.com. That's afterdivorceadvice.com.
And I'd also like to point out on her book that Kimberly is donating 25 cents each book to an organization close to my heart, Compassionate Friends, which my wife and I have attended several of their meetings after the loss of our daughter, and it's a very inspirational experience. They have some excellent speakers and do a lot of good work to help people who've lost children, young or old, or, you know, variety of circumstances. But well, thank you, Kimberly, so much for joining us today, and good luck with your workshop. I'm sure a lot of people, hopefully listeners that are tuning in, will be interested in going to that if they can. And also, I'd highly recommend Kim's book. Thank you very much for joining. Well, continuing our new feature, this week I have found another highly intriguing internet site, which I'm eager to tell you about. You may recall on an earlier segment of this program, we talked about preserving, reinvigorating, and restoring romance in midlife marriages, and I discovered an organization called Marriage Quest, which offers highly unique, intensive 3-day couple retreats in beautiful northern Vermont. Our second guests today are Kathy and Dr. Israel Helfand. They're the owners and co-counseling team on the website and their retreats. Hello, Helfand.
Hello
and
there.
Welcome to our program.
Thanks for talking to us today.
Well, tell listeners
about...
So it
sounds like you want to know something about our retreats here in Vermont.
Yes, I'm very interested in how they differ from the normal weekly marriage counseling sessions that a lot of people go to.
Okay.
There's a significant difference between weekly 50-minute therapy sessions and going for a 3-day intensive. I mean, one of the most significant differences is the continuity of service. When we're working with someone over a 3-day period, In essence, they're doing 12 therapy sessions back-to-back in 3 days. So not only do you get the advantage of having the continuity, but there's a lot of follow-up and homework that's done. A lot of the couples that we work with are trying to improve their physical sexual relationship with each other, and to work with someone, for 50 minutes and then send them off with, at best, vague instructions of having a date is dubious in terms of results. But to really be able to do a thorough intake, with a couple and understand how they do relationship, what their background is. In traditional therapy, it could take 3 therapy sessions just to complete an intake with a patient. And the other thing that's different is there's a big difference between licensed marriage and family therapists, social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists, clinical mental health counselors. For example, you could be a psychologist or a social worker or a clinical mental health counselor, even a psychiatrist, and probably be lucky if that person even took 1 course in marriage counseling or psychosexual development or conjoint therapy. But as marriage counselors and sex therapists, primarily all of our coursework and background and training and continuing education units are focused on relationship issues. So when you're dealing and addressing from a systemic point of view, the relationship, it's quite a different approach than when you've been trained in doing individual psychotherapy, but now you have a couple.
Yes. Tell listeners about the variety of counseling subjects. I know you do divorce counseling, infidelity, emotional affairs, and a couple that are of special interest to our audience, midlife crisis and empty nest syndrome.
Yes. We deal with that a lot. It's actually been interesting in the last 5 years, I'd say, the amount of couples that we're working with today who are in long-term marriages of 25, 35 years and now are empty nest, and it's hitting them hard. For some women, they have lived their life for their children, and many men have been very work-centered, and now all of a sudden coming upon retirement and empty nest, it's a huge change for the couple who has not been couple-centered.
And for, men in their 50s, it's like the new 40s now, because the divorce rate in couples over 50 has never been as high as it is now. People are living longer and expecting more.
Right. And relationships obviously take work, but now that people are living to 80, 90, 100 years old, and the 50-year marriage is probably could be more common, it takes more work to move to a new level of connection, especially if that connection was not there for the first 20 years.
So for the population that listens to you that are, let's say, in their 50s, they'll find interesting and also quite optimistic that studies are showing that couples in their 50s and 60s are reporting higher levels of sexual satisfaction in their lives than they felt they had when they were in their 30s. Isn't that great news?
They must be taking their Viagra.
Well, no. Actually, let me say something about Viagra then. 50% of men over 50 years old have some form of ED, erectile dysfunctions, usually, And what we have found is that for those men, Viagra will work about a year, but after that it won't work anymore. So what that tells us is that there are psychological issues that are affecting performance more than physical issues. More men are on Viagra who really don't need to be. Most of the ED that I work with tends to be more emotionally or psychologically based. A lot of men, for example, in almost 100% of all asexual marriages, it's the man's decision not to have sex. And that's usually a shocker for a lot of people because we have this, stigma around men thinking that, they could perform anytime, any place. But it's really not true. Men need to feel safe. They need to feel flirted with. They need to feel attracted to, attractive, desired, just as women do. And when men don't, however, the sexual relationship tends to tank more. Women have learned to acquiesce, to be codependent more than men. When men feel that conflict, they tend to shut down more.
Yeah. Well, we're just about out of time.
Okay.
Unfortunately. Go ahead. Well, I won't hear what you
have. One of the biggest secrets that I think is true about couples is that men are very sensitive.
Yes. Yes, I can speak to that myself. But tell us about the interesting, you're in a lovely location in northern Vermont, and couples come in there, they stay at a bed and breakfast and have an intensive three-day session. I'd like to go up there just to see the fall foliage. But sounds
well,
like a really
the fourth of the end of September.
Yeah.
We work with one couple at a time. It's not a group program, so we can get the work done.
And they should go to your website to find out all about it. That's marriagequest.com.
Yes, and a lot of people, when they come to Marriage Quest, marriagequest.com, and they work with us for the 3 days, many couples stay at a place called the Rabbit Hill Inn, which is a B&B, and it's
award-winning.
A lovely, lovely place, and if they mention us, they'll get a little bit of a discount.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, I hope people will go to your website. That's marriagequest.com, and thank you so much for being on our program.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.